At 0300 this morning, the expeditionary X-1 rocket ship, missing for 61 days, was sighted by Mount Palomar drifting in orbit some 90,000 miles out in space. All attempts to establish radio communication have failed so far. We don't know if anyone is left alive on board. The MR-1 appears to be a dead ship.
Always check your candy. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 192. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight, Brian. Hey, how much military stock footage do we have anyway, Dunaway?
Apparently a lot. No, stop it, Sam. Stop. You were winding too darn fast. Slow down, man. No, like this, around one rotation per second. Stop. You know what, Sam? Screw you. I hate you taught me into tandem telescope as a job. Nice. Screw the radiation. It's a girl.
Poor Sam. I feel bad for Sam.
What was that tandem telescope? I've never seen that.
Crap.
What was that?
It was crap is what it was.
Mm-hmm. They apparently had that. That's a real thing, apparently.
All right. You can explain that when we get into it, because I would love to know the origins of that stupid thing. Weird. Also with us, Randy. Hey, you took my weird pencil drawings of Mars, Jordan.
Aloha, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Dunaway, Dr. Ibbett, and by aloha, I mean to call your attention to a matter of utmost importance, a mystery so complicated that we will solve it for you first by showing you the survivors, and then having one of them tell us everything in a flashback, so there is actually no mystery whatsoever. Mm. We will then all buy Maytags and Oldsmobiles. Love, Don Draper.
Wow, that is the worst Don Draper impression I've ever heard in my entire life.
I was reading a letter from Don Draper.
Oh, okay, great. From the government.
One of these people who always speak as though they're on the radio.
Yep, that's who these people are pulled from. I have things to say about that. I'm glad you brought that up. Finally with us, Brian, careful or that vagina plant will eat you, Ibbett.
I saw that too. When I call you by name, you'll know it because I'll use your name. And I'll be looking at you when I do it, unless your nationality is Polish, in which case I could be talking about Polish. See Sam over there? I call him Gaelic, and it has nothing to do with his nationality.
Excuse me while I unzip my shirt.
Polish and Polish. That's pretty good.
This movie a hard time, but it's really hard.
I love this movie. Are you kidding me? It's the Angry Red Planet, and it's not a very good movie, but it is from a time when no movies were very good and they took themselves so seriously. Like it's such an earnest attempt to make something cool, you know?
And I'm going to give you the whole thing right here. This whole episode of Film Sack summed up. I want to get together with you guys and make a TV show a la Mad Men where the cast of the show, the people in the TV show are in the 1950s making movies.
Oh, dude.
That's it. They're just making movies.
How good would that be? Like just a... That's what they need to do. So the next thing up for those guys, they're ending with season 6 or whatever it is.
Right.
Matthew Weiner, what's his name? Whatever. Right. He can go off and do a 50s era science fiction film production company working with the Paramount or whoever. And yes, I'm big rubber monster tentacles and what it takes to get stuff done in that world and the seedy back belly of it all. There is no back belly. The underbelly is what I meant to say.
The backside. The CD backside.
I'm all for that. I think that sounds like fun. Well, let's let Scott Fletcher explain. He called this one in. Let's say Scott Fletcher phoned this in, but not in the way that you'd normally say. It's for the Angry Red Planet. Take it away.
The Angry Red Planet! Earth's first expedition to Mars loses contact and never gets it back. Mission Control successfully lands the ship remotely, but finds the crew's two only survivors in a fight for their lives. Horrific creatures, flesh-eating plants, and unfriendly intelligent life waiting for them back at the ship they've been struggling to get back to are only the start.
It's what they find out later that's truly frightening.
So he's working on his old house because he's going to, I guess, rent it. And in a big empty room and thought that'd be funny. And it was.
It was another time where's your toilet flushing sound, man? It would have been so good right there.
I don't have one ready. Closest I have to a toilet flush is that right there. That's the best I got.
Really? Is that one marked on your soundboard as toilet flush?
Because it doesn't matter whether he was in a basketball stadium or what. Whenever someone gets that sort of echo, mm-hmm. because there's flat walls around them, it sounds like a bathroom every time.
Bit. Yeah, I've had other podcast hosts make similar sounds, and I can hear them run. Like out of the can and like flush and then run. And you hear like this Doppler effect toilet sound. Like whoosh, and it just goes off in another direction. It's good times. Hey, everybody. Welcome. It's time to talk about the Angry Red Planet director. I.B. Melchier.
I.B. Melching.
He's Melchier. I'd be the Melchiest.
Yeah. I'm Melchier than you are.
Yeah. It's a weird name. Sir? Really weird name. Lowercase letters for the L.B. So I don't know what that means.
Well, it could be Ib. Yeah, it could be sure.
Or Pound.
Ib. Oh, yeah. Ib Melcher.
Ib Melchier.
Melchier. Yeah. That's
awesome.
That sounds right. Written by Sydney.
It's a Danish name. Sure. It's a very common Danish name.
Sure, of course. Sydney W. Pink wrote the screenplay, and this stars Gerard Moore, not related to Jay Moore by the same name. Oh. Or the same last name spelling. Nara Hayden, Les Tremaine. And I don't see the rest of the people for some reason. My computer did something weird. But anyway, a bunch of people you've never heard of or seen and are from a very different era of filmmaking. Mm-hmm. But they had their moment.
And you'll never see them again.
Nope.
Yeah, I was really blown away when I went through all of the people credited in the film. You know, like in IMDb, you just click around like, oh, who did the miniatures? Or who did the, you know, who was the associate producer?
Right.
And so many of them did nothing else. Like the editor of this film only ever edited this one movie.
Oh, really? Weird.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, like, how can that be? How did he get the job? How did he not ever get another one?
Well, I could tell you. I have some ideas about why he didn't get another one, but that could be just me being... I mean, whatever. Look, this is the 50s. This stuff's a little bit rough. I actually really liked the bat spider creature thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, are you kidding me? That was... That spider go down here. And... Yeah.
By the way, it's called Bat-rantula.
Bat-rantula.
Just so you know.
Okay.
But what they called it something during the movie, too, though.
You called it
Sam called it the Rat-Bat Spider Nightmare.
Yeah, Rat-Bat Spider Nightmare, right.
Yes.
Right.
And speaking of Sam, let's just real quick lay out this this crew. So this whole thing's told in a flashback from the one lady who supposedly survived it. We didn't know if the other guy survived or not. We just knew there was a green arm hanging out of a gurney. And she's retelling the story. And so when they go back and do it, it's surprisingly tropey, the kind of crew it is. It's the, you know, cocksure, semi-handsome dude in charge.
It's the cast of a 1950s newsroom, right? Yeah. It's like the editor, the guy who goes out on the street and reports the, mm-hmm. you know, there's this one woman. There's only one woman ever in any of these things.
Yep. She's doing weather on the news. In this case, there's a lot of sexism in this movie, but Sam is the Scotty character. Like everybody's got a stereotype role in a spaceship.
It's the tough guy. I mean, he's basically what you've got is you've got the Fantastic Four. You've got Professor Theodore is Reed Richards. And then, you know, you've got Irish.
Irish. Right. What's her name?
Irish is Sue Storm. Yeah. And Sam is the thing, Ben Grimm.
Who's the Flaming Torch? The other guy?
Well, this little suave captain dude with his shirt unbuttoned all the time.
That guy, dude. He was too skinny. He had Forrest DeKelly disease. He had some kind of not eating
Forrest
enough.
Forrest DeKelly.
Yeah, what'd I say? DeForest Kelly. What'd I say? Forrest DeKelly?
Forrest DeKelly. That's awesome.
That's even better.
It's all right.
What's awesome is we're introduced to the tropiest people by another trope. Like it's people watching TV through a storefront window. Mm-hmm. Learning about who these people are that are going on this trip. It's a trope within a trope.
Yeah, totally.
It's incestrope.
Yeah. It's incestrope. I see. Inception. Got it.
Inceptrope.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
Here's a crazy thing, and I apologize if you have this for later, but we gotta hit this now. 1959. Yeah. They spent $200,000 making this movie.
Yeah, it's a lot.
In 1959.
In 9 days.
Who the What did they do with all that money?
Well, there's one big lie about the movie a lot of people think is true. They had touted that red weird film technique as the cinema. They called it Cinemagic project.
Cinemagic process,
which was not correct at all. It wasn't ever intended to be that or any of this. It was actually a result of film developing mistakes. So they screwed up at the developers, screwed up completely and went, no, wait, keep it. We don't have to throw all that footage away. That will work because we need this weird thing, and plus we're out of money, so we're just going to go ahead and use it. So the budget was slashed mid-production, so the producers considered turning the film into black and white to keep the cost down. However, one reel became accidentally double exposed, which produced a shimmering, vaguely psychedelic glare that the director, Ib Melchior, however you say his name, Ib latched onto it, thinking it would suit his purposes for the Mars scenes. It also helped camouflage the cheap Martian monsters and scenery that were clearly hand-drawn and all that. So
it worked.
Yeah, it's funny. See, this is what I love, though. I want more. I like this kind of Mad Max approach to filmmaking.
Accidental.
Where, nothing works. And when it does, it's kind of half-assed. And something looks okay now, but in 100 years, it's going to look terrible. But then the rat thing, kind of badass, but still super shitty. And like, I want more of that in today's movies. I don't think you do that anymore. I don't think it's even possible anymore. Because when you do screw up now, or you're not a very good filmmaker, or you're whatever, at the very least, you've got really basic special effects tools and stuff in place that you kind of can't screw up. They're going to be maybe not great, but they're never going to be so bad that they're that laughable. And these are just laughable and so awesome. I hope this stuff never goes away.
This is like a, you know, what a kid would create now, like the rat bat spider nightmare.
Yeah.
That's the kind of creature that like someone, you know, the next Tim Burton, is creating in their bedroom right now for their little home project. Right.
Yeah, which is great. And in fact, when you started seeing, like at the beginning especially, there's all this military stock footage for everything. And somebody would say, there'd be a scene like in the main control center thing, and a guy would go, Wilson, make sure you turn the dial to 55 something something. Then he'd turn over the other way. And this guy, quote unquote, Wilson over there, would be a guy from a Navy stock footage of a guy turning knobs, but his head's turned from the camera and they overdub him going, yes, sir, I'll turn the knob to whatever. They did that a lot and I freaking loved it because to me, that was the basis for the film. Somebody sat around going, you guys, we have this treasure trove of footage. We just can use it to make most of our movie with.
Right.
And then they did.
Love it.
At first, I was really enjoying some of the things, like when they would cut from the first scene to the second, and you see this stock footage of some guys on a Jeep driving by some hangars.
Yeah.
You know, like that mishmash looked so bad that it was almost entertaining.
Yeah, it looked terrible.
You know?
When's the last time we saw this? Like Plan 9, maybe? They had a bunch of that?
Yeah, and it really kind of takes you back. Like you tell yourself, oh, okay, in 1959, if I was watching this, I would think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all right, what else am I going to think is really cool?
Yeah.
But then it always undoes itself because at some point you see all these people in a room with all these computers everywhere and you realize, man, that is less computational power than an iPod Nano.
Right.
You know?
No, right. It's true.
It is a depressing, you know, Houston, quote unquote, Houston was probably the most depressing set of like cinder block walls. And
it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad. But then, so the back to your announcer voice thing, this is what I love. This is an era of filmmaking again, where they're still pulling from the talent of the previous revolution, which was radio. And they pull these guys in who I've heard a million times on a million radio things, on the Whistler or on the freaking Shadow or some other Blue Beetle or some terrible old radio play. These are those guys. So they bring them in not because they're good looking, not because they're got great screen presence. I guess they're okay. But they bring them in because they can go, all right, we've got to figure out a way to get to that planet. And it's just that great cadence and that overtalk and that stuff that they're not used to doing. And that there's that period of filmmaking where all that stuff got, kind of got crossed. Oh, it's so good.
And it did not matter what you look like.
No.
Not a single person in this movie was cast for how they looked.
They did matter.
How, though? You
imagine some shuffling. You imagine that they cast all these people and then said, okay, now the guy who's balding, he's going to be the tough smoking professor. And this guy over here with the long, wavy gray hair, he's going to be the leader. Right. Like you get that they... Right. It mattered eventually to the process, but there's no one in this film that you look at and go, Wow, movie magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And actually, I feel like there was a little bit of at least stage magic. I mean, I like the fact that everybody wore the de facto space uniform, but no one wore it properly. Everybody either had man who had it, who was proud of his chest hair and had it zipped down that was to his belly button, or you had the lady who was pop collar happy,
right.
or you had the working man who had rolled up his sleeves, and then you had Professor Tight Buttons who had all the way up to his neck. So I mean, it was
like when she's trying to get his thing open after he's dying, sitting in the chair.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can't get you've buttoned this thing all the way up to your
neck.
Know,
wait, I see why you had the heart attack. You can't breathe.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna pull some chin hair. Hold on.
Was that the deal? Did his heart just fail? Was that what that was supposed to be?
Yeah, that was it. He had a heart failure, but I think we looked at it differently during the late 50s, like that. I think it was more like it was just too much stress. It wasn't the bacon you were eating. It was just, oh, I just can't take it anymore. It's just too much stress.
Mm-hmm. It's the work it took to get that perfect pointed goatee that guy had.
Right. That's pretty awesome.
This is back in a time when NASA did no sort of training or checking your physique or making run down a hill to see if you're going to be able to survive. Yeah.
How long do you think that guy could have blown on a tube with a ball in it?
That's it.
Not very long. That's right. And that poor guy, he died at 57, this main actor dude.
Oh, for real.
57 years old of a heart attack. Not many years after this was made. So there's other things that you notice about movies made at this time. We don't have the obsession of youth with youth that we have now then.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. So they would make a movie with you didn't have a movie unless you had seasoned older farts in the main roles. Nobody ever hired 21-year-old Jennifer Lawrence types in that era. Right. Nobody did. Which I think is just odd. Why not? Why was it any different then? Why did they just not trust it? Was it people lived less time and maybe these guys were all in their 30s and I just couldn't tell? Like, I don't know. What do you think, Randy?
I don't know. I realized that even this was even before Yuri Gagarin went to space. Like the first man in space was 1961, right?
Yeah. This is before the dog even got up there, right?
But when you think about it, Yuri Gagarin was in his early 20s.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy when you think about it, because we think of all those people as old and grizzled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? And go ahead.
Absolutely. Oh, well, the Gerald Moore, the primary actor in this movie, he was he looked super old to me. But if you look when he died in 68 at 54. That means
so he was like 47.
So when he filmed this movie, he was older. He was younger than that because what was like 59? So
it would have been 10 years younger. So he'd have been
37.
44? No, 44. Yeah, he'd been like 44. Like my age. He does not look my age, or I don't look his age.
No, he looked more like he was 60 in good shape for a 60 person.
But everyone looked older. Everyone looked older then. I don't know what the deal is. I'll watch like an old Ken Burns documentary about the 20s or 30s, and there's these guys walking, rolling around with these huge mustaches and beards, and they all look 50 plus. And you find out later, he was 28 when he died of the scurvy. Like, what? He is not 28. Are you kidding? He's a child at that point.
Speaking of Yuri Gagarin.
Yeah.
And this movie being 2 years before we even sent a guy up there.
Right.
They really had no idea how gravity was not going to work. They really, like, they didn't even try.
No. Well, they didn't know, right?
Right. They just had no idea.
Hmm. I miss the sci-fi of yore where you didn't have to explain all that stuff, where it was just straight up, we're in like a room, this rocket's very comfortable, we can all just kind of chill.
I was waiting for that rocket to find out that spaceship had a smoking library or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the professor popped out his cigar, I mean, it's his pipe about halfway through, he's like, poof.
Yeah,
gonna split a pipe in space.
Oh, you guys see all the cigarettes on that, like the Pentagon table? Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
This was clearly a time where you didn't even have to smoke. It was just a given that there'd be stacks. It's like a glass of water now in the Pentagon table. Right. Just everybody had a pack of cigarettes.
Bottle of water. I grew up in a household that had a cigarette, an ashtray on every table, and I still find it so like, wow, that's remarkable when you see an ashtray in a movie, just anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gee, they needed a place to put their ashes. In the future, movies will have electrical outlets everywhere because you need a place to plug in your cigarette.
You got to charge in your e-cigarette. Is that how those work? You recharge them? Is that how that goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can
plug them right in.
USB charge them too.
Oh, you're kidding. Can you play media on them?
Can you do what?
It's a matter of time, Scott.
Can I move? Can I move a PowerPoint presentation to my buddy's notebook, or how the hell
they work? Played Flappy Bird on it until about 12 hours ago.
They're gonna write. Listen, here's what's gonna happen with that Flappy Bird guy. Totally unrelated to this movie, of course. Yeah. They're gonna talk about him and write articles about him for the next 6 months,
right?
Until his next game comes out. Now that all this hype is so high, and it's going to be the subject of everything from internet bullying to independent game makers and what they can expect from their fame. It's going to be nonstop onslaught. That guy. That's all we're going to hear about on the internet. I kind of don't want to do it anymore.
See, I don't think so. I think it's going to be a buzz for about a week, and then we're going to totally forget, like the Harlem Shake. And you're just going to like when I just said it, and you're like, whoa, I haven't thought about that in months. That's what's going to happen. The Flappy Bird guy is going to be mentioned months from now, and you're going to go, whoa.
Sadly, I was in Phoenix in December, and I hadn't heard of the Harlem Shake in a very long time, and somebody said, hey, we're going to film one for the wedding thing.
Oh,
and I went,
no, really?
Oh, you guys, this is about 9 years too late.
Do you have a time machine to take it to 2011 and put it on the internet?
Yeah, can we somehow get it out before Psy exploded? Anyway.
Hey, you know what I just found?
What's that?
I found a sexy bikini picture of our redheaded lady in the
Iris. Oh,
she's still with us, by the way. Still with us.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
and that's when she just did this bikini photo about a week ago.
Great. Let's take a look at that.
Actually, this leads me to my first trope.
Oh wait, hold on. She's all right looking.
Talked about this so many times, but gosh, when it comes to professionals, jobs, responsibilities, things people all do together in groups. Women do it so much younger than men. Isn't it amazing how if you get together a bunch of people and there's only the one woman, she's like 20 years younger than everyone else.
Yep. She's way beyond the pale. At least it appears so. And it must be because all those people are long dead and she's still kicking it.
Right.
We talked about this with Moonraker. Remember how every woman just seemed to be young and it made everybody seem even older?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you want to know why they do that?
Why?
Because old men rule the world and they want young hot ladies. That's right.
Unfortunately, there's more truth to that than we perhaps would like to admit.
I want to. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to say that, but it's kind of true.
The movie's got all kinds of sexual harassment and inequality. Yeah.
You think everybody keeps going over to the porthole they have on the in that that's where everybody
and they stand.
By the
they stand right behind her, hip to hip.
Yeah,
every time.
Yeah,
she gets
breathing.
To go to the. Yeah. She gets to go to the window first, but if you're going to look out the window with her, you have to basically be having intercourse from behind.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Huffing her hair in and just getting so close.
You silly woman, you didn't see a three-eyed monster.
Yeah, oh,
that
was
hysterical.
Ah, you're an idiot.
Do it again so I can slap you.
Yeah, I got a good clip of her saying, essentially alleviating herself from the stereotype of being a hysterical female.
Oh my gosh. We'll and she was constantly, later. They made her do all the secretary work and all the cooking.
Yeah, open some cans.
Yeah. I find that so, because at the time, I'm sure this just came and went and people just heard it and it was no big deal because that's just the culture or whatever. Mm-hmm. I hear it now and I go, oh, wow, how is this happening? Why were we this way? And now we satirize it. And dramatize it, and we see it in like Mad Men and other things. We're like, man, that's so true. They used to totally do this stuff. I don't understand the origin of it or why it was allowed to exist. That seems, I know it's a naive thing to say, but I still feel that way.
I think it was in the imagination of men and how men saw women at that time. And in the imagination of men, sure, we can see where one day women might be in the workforce and they might even go to outer space with us. But if they do, they're making me some coffee.
It's purely to cook.
Right?
They're going to make me coffee and they're going to let me hang on them and freaking harass them until they accept my date offer.
Right.
Fantastic. I got a question for you guys about fake newspapers. This is one of my favorite tropes.
Yeah,
all right. So here's my trope thing. I am one of these for good luck.
My scrote.
All right. So is there such a thing or was there ever such a paper as either the Washington Telegraph or the Washington Express? They sound real, but that movie made me think BS on both of those.
Doubtful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But 59, the 59 was a year you could still, why couldn't you just say The Post or
The Washington
Telegraph? Was that one of them?
No, it was the Washington Telegraph and the Washington Express. They were both Washington papers. And I, right. and they were one after the other. And I'm thinking, man, there's a big market for papers in Washington, number one. And number two, I just kept thinking, those are fake. Those aren't real. So my point is, I've seen other movies, old movies, where it's like a spinning New York Times.
Yes.
They didn't bother doing that.
And that's like a paper we know. Why do fake ones? What's the point?
I don't know. But they didn't bother to do that in this movie. They just held it. Well, it's like some dude was just holding it out.
Yeah, but they went through the trouble of printing it and having it in the guy's hand. And I think it was completely fake. And I just thought, well, there's some of the money you didn't have to spend. They didn't have Photoshop then. It wasn't like they could just, hey, somebody whip that up and print it for me in 5 minutes. That took work. So I don't know. Just so something that jumped
fake,
out at me.
Fake newspapers and magazines have been a part of film for so a lot longer than this movie's old. And it seems to me like when you really see them is when the film itself, when the TV show itself is sucky. And so I'm guessing, you know, they know along the way, oh, by the way, we're making a really crappy movie. Mm-hmm. We don't want to, you know, we don't want to take down the Times with us.
Mm. Why do you think we're more forgiving, though, when they do it on purpose? So, for example, if it's a parody, and even if it's not a funny parody, are we more accepting of an honest, how do I put this? This came up during the movie for me, because they're so sincere and so earnest about this kind of bad script, bad movie, bad everything. But they're so earnest about it. I'm sure at some point that was taken seriously, but today I can't take it seriously. If they knowingly are making something bad, somehow I have more respect for the filmmakers because they're not, I don't feel like I'm being lied to completely. This isn't exactly, I'm not saying this exactly the way it is, but.
No. It makes sense. You gave it your best effort, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like it's, what's another good example would be like webs. Maybe the internet's done this to us. It's made us so cynical, but when someone does something online, and they go and they get real self-deprecating before they promote their thing, I'm more likely to appreciate that than I am if somebody is trying to pump it up and make it something more than it is, if that makes sense.
Right.
They're going to over-deliver and under-promise.
Well, I think the reason why you feel like that, especially about Hollywood, is Hollywood has typically done this with crappy movies. If there's a crappy movie, then they advertise the crap out of it and they boost it and they market it and they do everything because they know they're not going to get any word of mouth.
Right.
So they lied to us and go, best movie ever. Mm-hmm. Better see it first week before word gets out.
And that disingenuity, is that a word? Right. And disingenuousness.
Disingenuality.
That makes things a little, that makes things hard for me. I don't like that. I like a trailer that's nothing in tone like the film it's trying to portray. And I go see the movie. Even if the movie's better than the trailer was leading me to believe, I am like, okay, you guys can just tell me. I'll still go.
I don't know, man. I'm seriously having trouble getting excited about seeing RoboCop this week.
Well, I am because the reviews are so bad.
Going.
Dude, the reviews are. Let's just do a quick beep 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 update on the current state of things.
Future
for RoboCop.
Film sack movie
opening on February 12th. 52% currently on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, that's not the worst thing in theaters. Like the Nut Job at 11.
11 in Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. That's good. Nice.
And Vampire Academy at 13, but still.
I'd like to point out how disappointing it was to find out that Monuments Men was getting really bad reviews.
Really?
But it made me realize I don't care about all-star cast old men movies anymore. I haven't cared about one since Space Cowboys, and I don't think that they're going to ever work again.
But look at that! You've got Bill Murray. You've got the
George Clooney.
You got the John Goodman. Yes, Bob Balaban. John Goodman. Like, there's really people I'd like to follow.
Yeah, I'm more interested in actually reading and seeing the actual story because it's based on a sort of true story, right? I mean, it's for the most part kind of true. So yeah. I'm more interested in seeing the story than I am really caring about the actors.
Hugh Bonneville. the head of the house of the Downton Abbey man, that guy,
right?
But it's just not the thing anymore. Like you put together a bunch of old men that are
Space Cowboys,
stars,
right?
Space Cowboys. It just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because Randy, because these old men are just people that are almost our age now, and we're kind of
whoa. No. Easy there.
A little too close there.
But I'm just saying they continue to be exactly as older than us as they have always been. And
that length of yarn never gets longer.
What's the other one? Roadhogs? Is that the other example?
Oh, yeah.
Las Vegas.
Or Last Vegas.
All of the Expendables movies, I'll go watch it, the third one. Yeah. But I'm just saying.
My theory on those, by the way, is that John Travolta wants a motorcycle. Great, let's build a movie around it.
Yeah.
Right. Robert De Niro wants to get together with Morgan Freeman and go to Las Vegas. Great, let's build a film around it. Mm. Anytime there's like a trip to Italy, let's make this a movie actually.
Yeah. So that new
trip paid for.
That Christopher Walken movie that is I gotta find it here. Hold on, Christopher Walken. Okay, go back. Okay, what's it?
In the meantime,
there's a new Christopher Walken movie out on DVD now, and everyone's raving about it. In fact, Nicole talked about it last
psychopaths,
week.
Psychopaths, or not psychopaths? Yeah.
No, the other one.
Stand up guys.
So that looks like another one of those attempts, and that's also reviewed pretty poorly. Mm-hmm. But part of me wants that to work. So Randy, I'm with you. It doesn't. It sucks. It's never good. It's always bad for the most part. But a little piece of me wants it to be great because
I don't want to make that absolute. I just realized it when the reviews started coming in for Monuments Men. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a bunch of all stars, and they're going to trade on their names first, and don't really care if it's a great film. Yeah. Mm.
How about here's an example of a good one: Grumpy Old Men and its sequel. Oh, that's pretty good.
That was good stuff.
Or Bucks of Dust.
Yeah, straight comedies can get by. As long as they're making fun of the fact that everybody's old man in the movie.
But I think they marketed Grumpy Old Men in the right way, because when I watched Grumpy Old Men, I was not really familiar with their previous work. I knew they were, but I wasn't big into when they were big.
Yeah.
But then I went back and I watched everything, and I'm like, oh, these guys were great together doing stuff.
Ah, Glengarry, Glenn Ross. There's a movie, although the source material probably is more than it, that's awesome in its own right. The play has always been good and all that. Mm-hmm. But there's a movie full of really old actors from various walks of film.
Sure. No, you've got your Jack Lemmon, your Kevin Spacey, and your Alec Baldwin, like each from kind of a different.
And that was all 15 years ago, too.
Generation.
Well,
yeah.
Hold on. Right. Let's get your date straight. Grumpy Old Men 93. I just want to remind everybody that Grumpy Old Men's been out for 21 years. But Glengarry, Glenn Ross. Hold on now. Just hold on to your butts. Oh, yes. That features Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon.
About Al Pacino, yeah.
Ed Harris. Okay, fine. It's not exactly the same. You're right. You're right. But even if let's say that was nothing but old dudes, that still would have been amazing. That would have a 94 on Rotten Tomatoes no matter what, because again, the source material and the treatment of it is really good. So I think there are probably examples out there we can't think of right now.
No. I'm not saying this is a rule. This is not a rule. I like the first Expendables. I like Space Cowboys. I'm saying that it's just too easy for people to all get together and lean on each other and not actually have good substance underneath it all.
Okay, right. Fair enough.
And the joke behind Glenn, there's no real joke behind Glengarry, Glenn Ross, except, a set of steak knives and third place, you're fired. But it's not the fact that they're old. The joke behind Roadhogs, they're old. The joke behind Grumpy Old Men, they're old. The joke behind Space Cowboys, they're old.
Yeah. Really old.
Las Vegas, they're old. You know, that's
the joke behind Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, he's old. Yeah. He's old.
Space Cowboys made them all older than they needed to be. They all had diseases and they were all having, kidney problems and stuff.
That's too bad, because there are cases like the Rock, which I love. It's my favorite Michael Bay movie. Probably we'll all die before that changes. I think that movie's great. Right. And that same joke is there. It's the joke that this old cat thief / terrorist / threat to American security is old, but he's still got it. He's still kicking. He can still, how do you say it in that movie, still left the prom queen or whatever he said.
Right.
So, it's as tropey as you get. And there will always be movies about a guy or a group of guys that are too old for this shit, but they still do it.
Right.
And I think that's what you're describing. It's just that when they try to make the entire movie the premise of it, that we're old, let's buy motorcycles, it never works.
Mm-hmm. But I watched it.
Yeah.
Bringing this all the way back around to Angry Red Planet. Not only did all of these actors look old, like too old to do what they're doing, but they acted old. None of them seemed very spry. Mm. They were all kind of slow talking, and they're always looking through squished eyes at you. Like, it just, I don't know. I got to thinking, man, if you just went back in time and made the same movie with just some younger, more energetic people with some,
you know what I think? What? I think, I think we're a society that's become obsessed with youth. I'm going to celebrate the angry red planet with these old people out in space. I think old people are just as good as young people, if not better. Because of the
fair enough. I don't think that's Randy's platform, but yes, I appreciate where you're coming from.
No, but I appreciate. Yeah, thanks for taking that soapbox.
Oh, yeah, thank you for doing that. So here's the thing, though. Tell me if you remember this scene. Okay, I'm going to reconstruct it for you.
All right.
Oh, we are silently watching Sam, our good friend and comrade, die and be swallowed into a gelatinous turd of a creature on the planet. Anyway, what are we doing? So what's going on? Okay. Let's keep moving. Let's act like that never happened.
That was a very effective scene of him getting absorbed.
It was like Futurama, the big green gelatinous guy that keeps swallowing people. It was so stupid, but they were just like, oh, Sam's dead. Okay, anyway, and then on to the next thing.
No crying. No cry for Sam.
No time to mourn.
No.
The guy the girl ended up liking is still alive. Thank goodness. His bronze chest of fur is for the taking. That's gross.
No, man, when did chest hair become no longer in vogue? Because obviously during this time, chest hair.
It makes a little comeback
here and there, doesn't it?
But I'm just saying very recently. Like, chest hair was totally great until...
Tom Selleck was
basically until the first time the boys all went to the beach on 90210. Chest hair was fine until recently.
That's
until
a pretty
Top
good...
Gun, yeah. Until the volleyball scene in Top Gun.
Yeah, those are good ways to mark that, I think. Because after that, you really don't see it much. I agree with Dunaway. I think it died with... Well, Tom Selleck didn't die, but it died with his character. Like, that's just not a thing anymore. And if you do have it, well, you just have it, and that's just it. You're not calling attention to it. It's, you know, it's like maybe Robin Williams ruined it for everybody else. He's so hairy that you can't even, I don't know. He's a hairy guy, you gotta admit.
Tom Selleck, though, he was a special man. I don't know about you. I have spent a lot of time on Netflix watching old episodes of Magnum PI.
I have too. Right. It's great.
And it's really good. Yeah. And it's amazing how he was so into making sure that he came across as someone who actually lived in Hawaii.
Yep.
He says words correctly that no other star of the show ever says correctly and so forth. Mm-hmm. But man, when you see him in a pair of jeans with no shirt on, and you realize this is an actor. He's like 6'4", chiseled, and athletic, really athletic.
Yeah.
They have him do things in that show that you're like, wow, I just saw him lift a log on the beach. Like, that was
and
that
genuinely was funny and genuinely charming. And if, I mean, we are all, everyone at this table, super not gay, everybody. We are not gay.
But Tom Selleck is a guy
you got to reckon with, you know?
Yeah. If you want to go back and see all the different parts of a man that different kinds of people find attractive,
right?
That just watch Magnum PI. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Those are all of them.
They're all there.
And they only exist there. Because otherwise, we are gross. So, Brian Ibbett, I got a music trivia question for you.
Yes.
The Alien Monster was featured on what cover of what album for what band?
Well, only because I did see this in trivia when I was watching the movie, but it was The Misfits.
Yeah. Walk Among Us, 1982.
Rockabilly, what do you call that? It's psychobilly.
Mm.
Psychobilly.
And that's where I'd seen this creature before because it was driving me nuts. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing this album as a kid and going, oh, that's weird. Yes. But I didn't know the movie
apparently
was.
When you're on the planet looking at this creature, you can only see the bottom half of it.
God, that killed me. I was like, really? You just randomly go up to a Martian tree and chop off a chunk?
Exactly. even from the first time they showed it, I said, oh, those look like spider legs. And, you know, they hadn't showed the full creature yet. But
that was all pretty awkward.
I'm just legs here on Mars.
Yeah.
Did we not yet have a telescope in the world in 1959 that could see Mars clearly?
They did. They had one clear enough to look at it from across the oil lake and see that city that was drawn by somebody's pencil. They saw that just fine.
I'm just saying, I wonder when we got a really good look at Mars that would have been in all the papers and everybody, you know, at least in the U.S. would have gone, oh, wow, it's barren. It's really a red desert. Like,
right.
It must have been after 1959.
Yeah.
Or this movie is proposing that they went somewhere else. Mm.
Which is entirely possible at this point. I would not buy that. I did like how all of Houston or wherever that command center place was, stapled paper is the way to get through life, man. Like,
oh yeah,
everywhere, man, you went, there was a stapled in the corner stack of paper with it, when with half of it drooped over your console, and that's right. How you worked. I mean, it may that's have been right. How they worked. I don't know.
It was the hottest, the latest procedure notes. I mean, you had to have them out there. I don't know if they stapled,
and they were all multiple pages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can have those floating around. You got to keep page one with page two.
Best part of the show, or best part of the whole movie, is when they're all on a ship and they're doing a montage. Oh, there was a montage. Did we mention that? There was a. Oh, I got a plane. Hold on, we got a montage. There was a total montage. They had all this stuff going on, and they kept showing these very high tech portions of the ship. And Sam's doing his thing with his fancy tape recorder thing, and you got Dr. Man with his other stuff, and then you got Lady on a typewriter.
I loved it.
Just tick, 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 shing, tick, tick, shing, like it's some super tech thing she's doing on the ship.
Just they're putting on lipstick, looking back to see if the guy's sincere.
She was a total smurfette, but I actually wrote this down. that montage went from their 17th day to their 29th day to their 47th day.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad, too.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm very, very glad. Although the whole movie could have just been them interacting on the ship. Like it could, we're lucky that anything ever happened to this movie.
Yeah.
But that was a big montage. Mm-hmm. That was a lot.
I thought it was leading to space madness. I really did. I thought at the end of it, it would be, we've been on this ship for so long, I can't even look at you. I thought it'd be something like that. But it wasn't. They were just as jolly and happy to be together as they ever were.
You know, I love those. I love that trope, by the way, the time passing trope.
The time passing trope.
Mm-hmm. And I got to thinking, what's my favorite? What's my absolute favorite trope where time passes in big bunches? Mm. And I'm going to go with Rocky IV when he's training in the snow.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Right? Because Rocky grows a beard, I think. Is that, am I right?
Facial hair growth during a time passage montage is kind of awesome.
Maybe the other guy, the not Delroy Lindo, but very much like him guy. Is the one that grows the beard. I can't remember. Someone grows a beard in some right. movie that I've
You're
not seen.
You're talking about Apollo Creed. No, he was dead. You're not talking about Apollo Creed.
No, Rocky had a trainer. Anyway, I love stuff like that.
Wait,
I love
Rocky IV, who was the, now it's going to bug me. Who was the trainer in Rocky IV?
He's a Delroy Lindo looking dude.
All right.
He trained himself that year.
Did any of you see the, did any of you see the newer Pride and Prejudice 9 years ago, and no worries if you didn't.
No, because remember, as Scott said earlier in the show, we are all not super gay.
No, we are not.
We're super not gay.
Super not gay.
Well, thanks. But there was a Pride and Prejudice movie a few years ago, and there was a time passing montage where a woman's sitting on a swing.
Mm.
She's swinging and time's going by as though she's just sitting there for months.
Oh, I love this trope, though. Let's think. Wait, there's got to be one that we really like.
The Futurama one with the dog is a great.
Oh, that one's great. That one's still, it'll tug on you, man, that one.
Yeah.
There's another great one. The new finale of Futurama is like that. It got a great sort of time passes kind of montage going on. Where the whole world is frozen except for Leela and Fry. That's an awesome episode.
Oh, yeah. I love the ones where, and I'm trying to think of an example of where they do this, but where they show high speed footage of buildings going up and then coming down and then, this moving in and then
I love that. That's the time machine. That's my favorite.
Oh, yeah. Right. The newer one. Yeah.
Let's be clear. Angry Red Planet did nothing as good as that.
No.
Right.
Oh, God,
they just jumped from 17 to 29 to 47.
They had a Bolivian, clock for who knows why and a numbered slat thing that they would fade in and out of. So yeah, it was real stupid. But I remember just thinking, here's an opportunity. These people could be going crazy by now. This is going to talk about why it's so hard to be in space. And then I was reminded, like Randy keeps pointing out, this is pre-space flight. This is before we went to the moon. This is before we knew much about what gravity is or does. And they don't know. For them, this is a cruise ship. They don't know.
We were only putting animals in space at this point, which, by the way, was useless except for one thing. We learned one thing, which was they lived. Like, we didn't really get much more out of sending a bunch of animals to space, and the Russians kept killing them. But it just, like, this was years before, men were able to get up there. And, of course, they wanted to really, really badly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our proto-astronauts and cosmonauts really wanted to go. Like, I don't care if it kills me. I want to be the first guy. And so you imagine that a lot of the people who would watch a movie like this were also of the same mind. Like, I can't wait until we can all go to space.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then the movie depicts space as kind of like an office with a secretary.
Exactly. Boring. What it was.
Yeah.
Also, look how little we knew about Mars. We knew it was red, and we knew it was way out there because we had telescopes mm-hmm. that could sort of show a red dot, but we didn't have any idea what terrain was. Mm-hmm. So when they would get there, and I went, I'm like, I take away the fact that it's all hand drawn and looked terrible. Okay, sure. For a minute. Let's say that all looked really good. Jungle, like a freaking mm-hmm. tropical jungle.
Well, why would they think? What made them think to bring a boat?
Right.
That right. cracked me up. That cracked me up. Go get the raft.
Yeah,
go
get the raft.
What? The raft?
That was so stupid. That little photobomb alien that kept coming over the hill, kind of looking at him.
Yes, exactly.
I really did expect to start singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat when they were out there, though, as we've seen that so many times.
Totally. So stupid. And then a creature bigger than 10 leviathans, as big as 4 krakens sewn together, comes rising from the ocean. Whoa, they just row their way back like 60 miles or whatever.
With the rotating eye. When is that ever a good idea for an animal to have a rotating eye?
The eye was hilarious.
Big fan of all that, because that's when the movie was fun. And yeah. when they're just hanging around talking, I was just like, come on, guys, let's go. What are we doing? Yes.
Yeah, I have to admit, I fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like to say that on FilmSack because I want people to go watch the movie and then listen to the show. But
yeah,
I fell asleep.
It's easy to conk off and some of that stuff. Reverse footage for the takeoff of the rocket was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was weird.
Oh my God, that's how a rocket lands.
Yeah, sucks in all of its smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Just pulls all that fire back in. And that probably made sense to people in some way. Even if it looked reversed, they're like, oh, that makes sense. You got to land. You're just going to, you know, come
you're
back the way you
fire
went.
Fire off those exact same jets. Right. And it's amazing how
we just flip a switch
and it's the same jets that shot us into space are actually bringing us closer.
Yeah. And I'll admit the night shot of that, even though it was reversed, kind of ominous. It's like, ooh, everything at night's more mysterious anyway, but kind of look like, oh, that is a ship and it is coming back and we don't know what's going to be in there. And it was never a good payoff, but at least they had some sense of sort of suspense there for me. It was all right. Mm-hmm. My favorite character name was Professor Paul Wiener.
Paul Wiener.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And too much dicking around the ship is what I wrote down here.
Ugh, right. Totally.
Mine was I kept waiting for them to use that extreme flasher light on the oxygen consumption panel, but it never happened.
Yeah. Right. It never made it up to extreme.
Yeah, they kept having shots of Sam standing there like that was going to play a role at some point.
Or excessive. Right. It was excessive.
Oh yeah, excessive oxygen. Man, the oxygen better. Here is excessive. It's
that
just
was
a little too much. I mean,
that
come
was
on.
A good example of something I noticed over and over in this movie, which I kind of feel like is a trope, which is, we don't know what this should be. Let's go get a 14-year-old who reads science fiction magazines.
Yeah.
Right.
And have them design our instrument panel, have them design our spacesuits. Everything felt like that. It felt really immaturely thought out.
Right.
I thought it felt like the best they had at the time. That's what I felt. Right.
Like in the very first scene. And again, maybe this is just script stuff, but in the very first scene, the first time they mention this vehicle, this thing in space that they think has finally returned after being lost, they call it a rocket ship.
Right.
And I just thought, was this written by a kid?
What, well, you know,
what
you
could, adult general of the military scientist would be sitting here referring to that thing as a rocket ship?
The rocket ship.
I think it was more, we had more of
bring more robots to put in the rocket ship.
More robots.
Yeah. It's a different time, man. You know, it's just, you know, we were immature in the public about what all this
and
was.
You had to admire, you have to admire the imagination. I mean, the imagination and the way we do things with film has always spawned people to make real innovation, or at least it inspires, or it rustles up people's imagination. So they think about these things and eventually they do get to space. And Star Trek is so often credited with inspiring actual astronauts to work hard, or people that are, you know, engineers at NASA or whatever. And, you know, that kind of imagination does inspire this stuff, but boy, in its primordial form, it's just kind of shitty. It's mm-hmm. just not very good.
Mm.
And that's okay.
It was entertaining though.
Yeah, I had a fun time. Yes. Yeah. Of all the movies we've seen, perhaps
this is the most recent.
Right.
And it was maybe one of the most entertaining that we've seen that are pre-60s. I
was
really
definitely the most read. I was wholly unprepared for how much of that outside on Mars was going to be, how red it was going to be.
It was so red. It was angry, you know, too. Very angry
and
red.
It was. And it, at first, I thought I was going to be totally annoyed by it because, like, oh, there's no way I can sit through watching this for, you know, another 30 minutes or so. But it really actually started kind of, I kind of started being blown away with how well it worked just by accident, you know, just totally serendipitous.
It became, if you forgot about how dumb it was. Right. And occasionally you'd see like, oh, that's an oak tree and like a plant that's normal now, but it's just in red. But if you could get past that, you could kind of live in there a little bit, you know.
Yeah, then they got the big vag plant. So that was good.
Mm-hmm. Vag plants are good. Yeah. Plant that looks like a vagina. It's an old category here on the show.
Right. But like, I wish this movie had just a little twist. Mm. Like while she's describing the very end of her experience, some technical guys are taking apart the landing vehicle, yeah, and Bat Ranchula comes out.
That'd be great.
Right?
Yeah, like aliens. Like, oh, Bishop, it's so good to see you. Why is there a tail through your guts?
You know,
yeah.
is that not a...
This influenced other things later on. Because, yeah.
Okay, the worst part of the movie for me was the super intelligent race of beings that live on Mars choose weird times to talk to them. But the times they choose, is it standing outside the window? I know it looks like a drawing and doesn't look real at all, but was there a Martian just standing outside the ship going on?
I think it was a projected vision.
Okay. The three-eyed peeper, you mean?
Point.
Really?
I thought it was supposed to be a real dude out there.
I thought so, too. I thought he was just peeping in like,
yeah,
we're all on Earth.
I was on a boat for a long time, and now I'm standing here.
I couldn't see. I was hiding behind the rock. You walked right by me.
The whole time.
Stupid humans.
Idiots. Your friend has green goo on him. You're screwed. All right. Let's do some. You want to do clips?
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it just seemed to me like it was an ethereal creature.
Oh, yeah.
A lot more than this.
It did wave like it.
Wave like it. Hand came up.
Yeah. Like it was a balloon.
It was pretty
stupid. My purpose here is simply to make the woman faint every time I look in the window.
She provided good post art post picture when I put this up.
Sure.
Yeah, right. No problem. All right, let's get to some clips. I don't even know who says this, but someone's talking to George.
That's a tall order, George.
This is short but sweet.
That's a tall order there, George.
Yeah, George.
That's a tall order, George.
I like that guy. I liked all those guys.
No one sounds like that. You cannot name an actor who has been working in the last 20 years who sounds like
that. No, nobody does anymore.
Oh, yeah. Why?
This one, too. Right here.
We must have it.
Yeah, no one talks like that anymore.
Well, at least that kind of sounds a tiny little bit like the guy who's on the narrator on Cops or Real Stories of the Highway Patrol.
Yeah. Except again? Yeah, but even his, he's just a narrator. Whoops, hold on.
We must have it.
Yeah.
Like that you hear. But the first guy...
That's
like
a tall order, George.
That's a tall order.
Like, since the passing of Ernest Borgnine, there's no one who sounds like that.
Come on, Brian. There you go. Got 50 bucks. All right, here's some sweet 50s techno babble. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
Professor Weiner, what are our chances?
Weiner.
They depend on several factors, General. The MR-1 is, of course, equipped with robot control, which can be activated by remote triggering from Earth.
You know, robot control.
Robot control.
It sounds really authentic. People beep, will buy it.
It goes beep, boop, beep, boop.
Robot. I'm glad they said robot, though.
Yeah, I'm surprised they said robot, because that was in the peak time of robot.
Yep. Now, every time Brian Ibbett goes to Vegas, or is about to, I secretly record the phone call, and this is what he says right before he leaves.
Then it's decided. We take off for Nevada at once.
All that music and everything.
Oh, I do. I have a timpani player who travels with me everywhere I go.
Timpani and xylophone, man. I don't know how you could have had this any music in this movie if you didn't have a timpani and a xylophone.
No, yes. It was some law, Hollywood law, forbade anything else but that.
And the xylophone was always going plunk a plunk a plunk, plunk a plunk a plunk, like that.
Because that's what a xylophone does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When Dunaway finds radiation, he says this.
The girl. The hell with radiation. Let's go.
The hell with radiation.
Love that.
That made me laugh. I wrote that down in my notes, too.
Let's see. Some flirting.
Hey, two moons. What a place for romance, huh?
Yeah. What do you think, Sam? Yeah.
Now I'm going to make up a song about two moons. Two moons.
Two moons. And I'm going to overdub it.
They only hired me because I can lift this gun.
Yeah, that's right. Because I'm a big, thick dummy.
I was actually expecting a sex joke. Like, they both pulled down their pants and saw two moons.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
With the wrong era for that.
Yeah. Did not happen.
This was a Judd Apatow movie, sure.
Oh, why not? That
Judd
guy lived
Apatow, Angry Red Planet.
Guy lived a long, pretty fruitful career. He was 80 when he died, and you would totally recognize him today in stuff when he's played much older and with a mustache and stuff. He's the guy that played Sam.
Oh, yeah, look at that mustache. Guy.
Yeah, yeah. You don't know the name necessarily, but you definitely have seen stuff with him in it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
lots of sort of common movies, too. Like, it worked a lot, all the way up till his death.
Common movies.
Common
movies.
The common movie.
There's a lot of TV stuff like Webster and She's the Sheriff and Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of...
She's the Superman. Sheriff. Holy crap. I forgot. Never forget She's
Suzanne
the Sheriff.
Suzanne Summers and her Thigh Master.
It was great.
And Patrick Duffy, right?
No, that was that other thing they did.
Texas Lady Ranger.
No.
Step by Step, wasn't it? Was the one with
Step by
her?
Step, yeah. That's a TGI Friday joint. Or not TGI Fridays. That's a restaurant. It was a thing. Yeah, it was the TGIF weekend CBS thing or whatever.
That's right. Oh, yeah, that one didn't happen.
Came on after Urkel.
Yeah, they were on after Urkel. Exactly.
Right.
Right? Urkel wasn't on the same show.
No,
that was Family Matters.
Yeah, and his dad was the dude from Die Hard, the the one that sat out in the thing and called him Carl or whatever. What did he call him?
Carl?
No, he had a different name. He didn't call him by his character name. He called him something else because he wouldn't tell him his real name.
Cowboy?
No, I was like, hey, how you doing up there, Jimmy? Or, shit.
Jimmy. No idea. Jimmy. I don't know. Where are we going?
All right, here's some more dialogue. And this used to work on people, so I want to play it here.
Hey, when's chow, huh?
Coming up. Come on, Tom, you can help me with the rations.
Yeah, I'd rather be carving a thick steak at Tony's.
Make it medium rare and I'll join you.
You take a rain check?
If it won't bounce.
Oh, I hate that kind of talk.
That's a great conversation.
It's so shitty.
Office politics, baby.
Somebody used to like that, though. There's a whole generation of people who are like, that's pretty good stuff right there, they just said. And they're just like, no, that's all bad.
That's what I want to eat. I want a steak wrapped around a cigarette soaked in whiskey. I'll join you.
That'd be great, as long as your check won't bounce. Bah. Here you go. Mumbo to the jumbo. Right here.
Atmosphere density resistance factor 0012.
Resistance factor 0012.
Drift zero.
Drift zero.
Hey, just repeat it. Drift zero.
Hey, that was before we knew it was cool to say double alt.
Yeah. That's right.
Instead of double zero.
But drift zero? Is that a significant number to anyone? No.
Drift none.
Just say none. We don't have any drift.
Got zero drift.
We got zero drift.
We got zero drift.
0%.
Fake doctor talk. Some more mumbo jumbo, but this stuff's pretty good. This is back on Earth. This is the doctor with a tie who did not know how to tie his tie. I don't know if you guys noticed, but that guy's tie was barely like 2 inches from his neck. So here he is doing his thing.
Nurse, sodium luminol, 2.5 grains.
Yes, doctor. Intravenous?
Grains? Yes.
Okay, two things. Grains and
grains?
Intravenous? It's intravenous.
Yeah.
Not intravenous.
Would you have me stick the grains up or hoo-ha? Or would you rather me stick it into an arm?
Yeah, is this the horse pill I shove up their ass or is it intravenous? Stick it right up intravenous.
I want to hear that again. Hold on.
Nurse, sodium luminol, 2.5 grains.
Yes, doctor. Intravenous?
Yes.
Intervenus,
sir. I tried to give her 2.5 grains. If you ever tried to cut the grain in half, it's really like one of those prank shows where neither person, like the actor nor the fool that they're playing the joke on, have any idea what the other person is talking about.
Nope, they're just saying their lines.
Yes,
sure. Yes, they're improvising. That's what that is. All right, here's some. Get some. Oh yeah, this is great doctor advice.
She ought to get some rest before we use drugs.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
She ought to get some rest before we use drugs.
Drugs.
Let's just try.
Wow, that is
hilarious.
That is like really great advice. All purpose advice.
Yeah.
Right.
Doesn't matter who you are or what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Get some rest before you use drugs. All right, here's another good one. Doctor really knows his stuff.
Her mind might snap if we forced her to remember the horror she has so carefully obliterated from her conscious level.
From her what?
Her conscious level. What about Stanley was talking in that scene?
I don't know why I fixated on him so much, but he's great.
He's awesome.
He's really great.
The horror.
Drugs. All right. Here's, I don't know what this is. Oh, yeah.
I'm going too.
That's just her freaking out.
That was,
Come on, guys. Yeah. I'm going too.
I'm a lady. I'm going.
They stay in the cockpit.
Yep.
Feel really. Go ahead.
Of the genus, there's only two ladies in this movie, and both of them were redheads and looked almost exactly alike.
Who was the... Oh, the nurse.
You're
right.
Mm-hmm. Got so confused. I'm like, wait, why is she taking care of herself?
Yep. And they both look like madman lady. What's her
really,
name?
Really, there was only one lady in this movie. I mean, this was a real Smurfette. This was this is one of the best examples of a Smurfette we've seen. Yeah. She was... Yeah. I felt sorry for her, like, to be so very alone against all of this masculinity.
In the world of white, powerful men, she stood alone to represent womanhood. World. Yeah. I liked her because she ended up kind of dumping Hollywood after a while and just doing her own thing. And I always respect that for some reason. I don't know why. I think that's a big deal. She doesn't have an IMDb photo. Why? Because she doesn't need one. Mm-hmm. Who cares? She's somebody's grandma's now. Now she just can chill. It's fine.
She can just chill.
You don't have to work up till you die.
You didn't get the bikini picture I sent you?
I did. She's thicker in that photo than the movie.
Do you like what she wrote on it?
No.
Did you think I look healthy?
Did you think I look healthy?
What was it? DJAI?
DIDJA.
Was it drug period there? Maybe something going on with her life? Who knows? I shouldn't say. Okay. Here's a test. We like these when we hear something you cannot decipher in a film. And I think it's usually because they didn't go back and reshoot it and they just let the screw up stay in. I don't know for sure on this one because I don't know what he says. So here's the big chance for you guys to tell me, what is this guy saying?
I want you to always stay inside of me. Sam, your ultrasonic freeze gun hooked up. All right.
Yes, sir.
One should always stay inside of me.
Yeah, that's not good.
Sam, is your ultrasonic freeze gun hooked up?
Oh, okay, wait. Let's do it one more time.
One should always stay inside of me. Sam, your ultrasonic freeze gun hooked up? All right.
Yeah, sure. The ultrasonic, okay.
The second part. He's not talking about the first part.
Both parts, but mystery solved on that second part because I was like, what is he doing? What are they saying? And how did Sam know to say yes, sir?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
That was
now. Joe, show me something to freeze so you can bop it in the head with your gun.
That's right. That big dumb and, stupid
and
gun.
And bop me in the eardrums, please. Yes. Stop.
Oh, my I was going to ask you, what do you think the most annoying sound in the world is? And here it is. I'm really sorry for Rudolph's playing that again.
I'm glad you only played the first 10% of it.
I'd say that's even giving it too much credit. That was maybe a second of what turned out to be a good couple of minutes.
Oh,
of
the
that.
Freeze ray isn't killing Beth spider critter monster nightmare thing, but the sound is driving it away at least.
It was so bad it blinded it.
I love how one of the first things they encounter in space, again, all of this being told via memory. Mm-hmm. This is all flashback. One of the first things they encounter in space is a meteor. Yeah, it's flying along and they're scared it's going to hit them. And for some reason, it makes this high pitched noise. Mm-hmm. So freaking weird. Why'd they do that to you?
They don't know yet. They don't know what's going on yet. It's 59, man. They don't know what
space sounds like.
Yeah,
I mean, even we've totally just and only since. Probably since Battlestar Galactica, the reboot, have we really figured out how to make a space scene seem fascinating with no sound.
Yeah. That thing is really good. I mean, there's sound, but it's muffled and it's really rare. And we just finished that whole thing up and I love how that was all done. I still think it should be the standard for this sort of thing moving forward.
Gravity did it really well. They did it from like an inside perspective. Like, you know how you can hear your own. If you ever put your ear like to your shoulder or something, you can hear and you can hear things like that. They kind of do that whole thing where everything sounds like the only
I can hear my neck snap is what I can hear.
Snap, crackle, pop. All you hear is body movement.
I noticed that Firefly was really good at this. Had a great sense of silence in space.
Right.
They'd show the ship floating and not really making any kind of noise. I always thought that was cool. So yeah, we've come a long way. Whistling comets too. There ain't nothing making no sound.
Man, I love the thing about Firefly in space is that you don't hear the ship because there's no air outside, but you do hear the guitar. Yeah. I like that.
That's the way to do it. Okay, here is some sweet sexism for you. A little taste of it.
I know you think I acted like an hysterical female back in the ship, but I assure you I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself. I won't get out of your sight.
Have it your way.
That's what I like to hear, baby.
I won't get out of your sight.
I know I acted like a hysterical female, which implies that women are nothing but hysterical females.
Right.
What are you doing, 50s? What are you doing?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you guys? All right.
We wouldn't know how to do it right if we hadn't seen how to do it wrong.
I say this every morning when after I take the dog for a walk right here.
We've had enough excitement and swashbuckling for one day.
That's all right. Now go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So apparently swashbuckling does not at the time does not mean just sword fighting.
Right.
It means
right.
more.
Yeah.
Something more like
just any adventure.
Yeah, any adventure.
Mm-hmm. I still think that's the origin of it though, right? Isn't it? Like they just used it for other stuff, like swashbuckling hero right. would be.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Dude swinging on a vine between ships and
he's probably, you know, he's probably just kind of saying.
They don't have vines, do they?
You just, you meant like sailing ships. For some reason I thought spaceships, like a dude is swinging on a vine between two spaceships.
I got Tarzan, space, and pirates all mixed up. Okay, here's, I don't know what this is.
Yes, we can do it.
Oh yeah, that's another doctor moment. Yes, we can do it.
Yes, we can do it.
I think that'll be, that should be on my answer machine.
Oh, that was pointy goatee man. That's who that was.
Yeah.
Before his death.
The professor.
Yeah. Here we go. We are the planet Mars. Okay. Here.
Metaverse, we of the planet Mars give you this warning.
We of the planet Mars.
Yeah, I kept trying to figure that out because I thought it said too. I thought it said we the planet Mars or something, but it's we of the planet Mars.
Yeah. It's all bad. It's all
in order to form a more perfect union.
She ought to get some rest before we use drugs.
Okay, fine.
Drugs.
Unless we give her the drugs that make her get rest.
Oh, the drugs.
That guy needs to be his own character in his own mini spinoff of films, and he's dead, by the way. That guy did not live much longer than that movie. Okay, let's get to the big business at hand here, which is, the checklist somewhere. Perpetuate the stereotype that putting perfume on while aboard a rocket ship is still somehow embarrassing. Check! What was she worried
and probably
about?
Probably extremely dangerous.
She's probably trying to cover up the smell of man sweat in there.
Yeah, right? Probably. She didn't want to offend everybody.
47 days of man sweat.
Oh, man.
Not so comfortable on the ship after all. And answer to the question, what are we going to do with all this excess Jell-O? Check. Gross. All pushed up on the window like that? It was gross. And then finally, fix the problem in 5 minutes at the end? Check. Done.
Got it.
I thought I'd done away when that happened.
Absolutely. That's what you do in sci-fi.
All right. Daryl did not send us Trek connections for this film. However,
Got two.
No, Trek but you found them. So give me what you got. How did it go?
So the voices of the Martians were done by two actors named Ted Cassidy and Billy Curtis.
Oh.
Both Ted Cassidy and Billy Curtis appeared on Star Trek, the original series. Ted Cassidy was Gorn in the episode Arena, among other characters.
Wow. That's a big one.
And Billy Curtis was the small copper-skinned ambassador in the episode Journey to Babel. That was the name of his character, small copper-skinned ambassador.
I was about to say, copper skin, that sounds horrible.
It's a little racist.
It does
not
sound like a nice thing to say to someone.
No. Good job. You've found some stuff. Where do you find that kind of thing? You just did a little cross-referencing, or what did you do there?
Yeah, I just drilled through IMDb until I found them.
All right. There you go. It's not as fancy as Daryl's machine. He has a quote-unquote machine that he puts these things through. I imagine it being like a probe going.
I appreciate Daryl.
Warning. All right. Soundtrack grade. I'd give it an AFTT for appropriate for the time. It was fine.
Yes.
Sure.
What else were you going to do?
Wasn't the worst thing about the movie.
No.
It was really house orchestra. Like when you watch this movie, like even from the very beginning, what we were talking about, the xylophone and the timpani sound, really house orchestra. Like you could have applied this to anything that was made in 1959.
Yeah. I agree. And it was like the radio plays. They had an orchestra inside and they were doing it along with the dialogue. And that's how this felt. I really do believe radio was just such a lead in to film. Well, I know it is that they had to, you know,
I was surprised
they had to branch out slowly. Just the way it worked.
I was surprised it was this far along still though. I mean, you know, 59, that's pretty far along into the TV movie industry, right?
When was I guess so. They would My Three Sons was on TV, and we were past the like 6-hour Lucky Strike presentation of Milton Berle. Or
I mean, we were dealing with color here, not black and white.
That's right. Let's do the Twitter post. This is where you guys, in 140 characters or less, you sum up the Angry Red Planet. Let's start with Randy.
The Angry Red Planet. Believe it or not, it's actually red. And it's actually angry. So, just like the top of Brian Ibbett's head.
I wonder where this was coming.
I'm offended.
That's not bad.
That's it. I'm changing my Twitter post right now.
No, I think I'm changing the color of my head.
Black Red Planet. Randy's stupid.
Next up, Brian Dunaway.
You too.
Angry Red Planet, like a three-eyed peeper behind a space rock.
Oh, Lord. Who was that? Is everyone all right?
I don't know.
Randy, you okay, buddy? All right.
I just tripped and fell through a well.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That was bad.
It's one of those, like, you know, like sometimes you're just kind of pacing and you trip and fall.
Yeah.
Only in this case, I had a headset on.
Brilliant. Sorry to stretch your butt on your own time, Randy.
Yeah.
Brian.
All right. Angry red planet, like a three-eyed peeper behind a space rock on Mars. You'll crap when you see it or scream and pass out.
You'll crap when you see it.
When you see those photos. You've seen them. Yeah. It's like, oh, you'll crap when you see it.
Yeah. There's a big Vine. There's a big Vine account now that's got like 2 million followers now. That's all paranormal. Supposed Vines that actually catch ghosts on screen and stuff.
Right.
It is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And the comments are full of 12-year-old girls who are sure it's real. It's driving me crazy. I can't deal with it. Anyway.
You know what? Yeah. I'm getting involved. This sounds awesome.
Okay, get on that. Brian Ibbett.
This is a short and sweet one. Angry red planet. You should have that looked at.
Yeah, you should. Nasty stuff. Let's get to the... Oh, just handed me just now these envelopes. These are the two alternate titles. It's either, quote, "This planet looks like my kid's eighth grade art project," or "Let's see how chill we can be after Sam dies horribly." I think you go with that one. emails. We got a couple emails. One came in from Adam from Las Vegas who said it was sent from his Windows phone. So they are out there. They exist. Dear Scott, Brian, Randy, and Brian, thanks for the Film Sack. I have cherry picked episodes from Film Sack and films I have watched and enjoyed all of them so far. I would like to request Some Like It Hot. It is now on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to hear your take on this iconic film. Thank you, Adam in Vegas. I can't remember what it is.
It's Marilyn Monroe. And
is it the one with the skirt getting blown up?
No, that's The 7 Year Itch. Some Like It Hot is the one with, and I'm almost going to say Jack Lemmon again, but it's the two guys, no, not Jack Lemmon. The two guys, Tony Curtis,
right.
Can't remember who the other guy is, but they go undercover. They bosom buddies their way onto a train with all these other hot women performers, one of which is Marilyn Monroe, in a way to just hang out with these hot women. And
Marilyn Monroe, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, you're right about that, and Billy Wilder, all in the same film.
What's Jack Lemmon?
So that's in black and white, was also made the same year as Big Hairy Red Angry Planet.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. No way. Get out of here.
And it's streaming.
I just bought it for Tina for her birthday on Blu-ray.
Oh, you did? No way.
Yeah.
Yep, totally. Is it good? I mean, I don't even know. I've not seen it.
Yeah. I thought it was funny. They did a whole series of movies there where it was kind of like those buddy comedy movies for a while. And they kind of brought Marilyn Monroe in that one. I thought it was enjoyable.
Okay. I wouldn't be opposed to it. It seems so much like a chick flick to me, though. Not that those can't work for the show.
No, this is the same year. It's mostly insults to women.
This is weird.
Just like the movie we just watched.
It says here that, that's interesting. People that like this movie also liked Scary Movie. Okay, great.
Okay,
that
weird.
Makes sense.
That is weird.
That's that we
but
found.
They, but
where,
they didn't like it for 50 years.
No. Good point. Hey guys, Josh from South Korea wrote in. He says, "Hey guys, the great leader in the North is weird. I just wanted to thank you for all." He didn't say that part. "I just want to thank you all for the delicious content you've provided so far, and I hope for much more in the future. My suggestion is for the 1975 film Death Race 2000. Honestly can't see why you haven't sacked this already. It has Jive Turkey Rockin' Balboa, Rocky Balboa, rather, and Mr. Kung Fu Carradine. Spoiler, Carradine has a grenade built into his hand. He literally calls it a hand grenade. Anyway, love the show. Can't wait for more Sacky Goodness in the future. Josh from South Korea." Now, here is my memory. We had that on the list twice and was yanked from Netflix twice.
Didn't we watch one that was similar to this, though? What was it?
Didn't we see the new Death Race or something with cars?
We didn't see Death Race, though.
Cars.
Anyway, yes, it's streaming. I've just added it to our spec list.
Yeah.
And, let's see if it hangs around for a couple of weeks. Maybe we can pick it up.
Because I saw the Statham one, and I didn't see the Luke Goss 2010 sequel, but I'm having a memory of Death Race 2000.
Now, this is the one where they take
Cherry 2000. We didn't see Death Race 2000.
That might be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Man, this is the one where you get like this is one where everybody got all the idea to start making points for killing people who with their car for points, like duh, look, an old lady, 4,000 points. Is that kind of what this movie was?
Well, pretty much. Yeah.
My memory of it was, it wasn't just points. It was just like the future sport. It was like,
They were prisoners, weren't they?
Prisoners who built cars and raced them around.
And if they won, they could get their freedom or something. Mm-hmm. If I remember that right. The Statham one's kind of fun to watch. So if you're bored, it's one of those Mortal Kombat director movies, whatever his name is, Paul Anderson, that guy. Not the good Paul Anderson, but the other one. So he's got you covered there if you want to see that. Thank you for your emails. You can send your emails to filmsack@gmail.com. We love to get them. Next week, that Arnold movie.
The Last Stand.
The Last Stand, right. The newer
Johnny
one.
Johnny Knoxville and what's his name? Luis Guzman.
These are all points for it. So everything you've said so far makes me go, hey, guy that directed The Weird, The Loud, and The Ugly or whatever the hell it was called. That's good. That's one point. You got Luis Guzman. I love him. He's great in everything. Speaking of Paul Anderson movies, he's in a bunch of those. And then what was the other guy?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Not Schwarzenegger. Knoxville. But the Knoxville kid. I love Johnny Knoxville.
The Knoxville kid.
I'll watch him.
The Knoxville kid?
That kid's going to go places, see?
The Knoxville kid.
I see his name on credits and I get more excited and I don't know why. I have a thing for Johnny Knoxville.
Let me give you two more names from this movie that might get you interested. Forrest Whitaker.
I'm in.
Peter Stormare.
Oh, I love Peter Stormare.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we've talked about him so many times. He took your eyes and gave you new eyes in Minority Report. Come on.
Oh, no wonder I can't stand him. No wonder.
I have these copies. I need to mail these to you guys right now.
Yes, please do. Let me tell you some more. We're going to watch The Man from Planet X. We're going back to the far past.
Yeah.
As soon as we can. We're going to watch the original Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
We haven't we haven't seen a good horror movie in a long time. We haven't seen a bad horror movie in a long time. We're going to watch The Octagon.
Yeah.
And if you've never heard of this, look this movie up, people. We've got Congo, Resident Evil, and maybe some Like It Hot.
Yeah, and if we can ever somehow get, we got to get a Mad Max movie in at some point.
We're working, man. I now have a bunch of saved searches for Instant Watcher.
Brian,
and
I just like, who runs Bartertown, Brian? Who?
Master Blaster runs Bartertown.
Okay.
Into the microphone.
Can we watch Templar? Can we watch Thunderdome? Because that's the one we should do for the show. I love Road Warrior, seriously. But.
One of my saved searches. Okay. Yes, absolutely. The minute it's streaming, we're watching it.
Okay, we're bumping something. I think that's great. Well, we're very excited to bring that to you and so much more. We'll do that starting next week with that Arnold movie. Whose name? Last Stand. That's it.
The Last Stand.
The Last Stand. It's
that Arnold movie.
That Arnold movie. It's filmsack.com is the place you want to go for all filmsackery. If you missed old episodes, they're all right there. Filmsack@gmail.com is our email address. And once again, you can follow us on Twitter @filmsack. Leave us a review wherever fine podcasts are downloaded, iTunes or whatever. We'd love that stuff. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah, see?
See you next time, see?
Meh.
Meh.
She ought to get some rest before we use drugs.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.